And Vavim Nalif, eight lines down from the top. And we had a memra of Rabbi Yitzchak that Rabbi Yochanan paskins halacha ki Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara now questions that. Umi omer Rabbi Yochanan hachi. Va omer Rabbi Yochanan is really possible Rabbi Yochanan accepted halacha like Rabbi Yehuda. On the one hand, Rabbi Yochanan himself is committed to the principle of halacha kistam mishnah. And now we're going to learn a Mishnah Masechta Kelim in the 18th Perek that addresses the issue of Tumah Vitara in something called a Muchni, which is a wheel that's attached to a coach, to a wagon. And the Mishnah says, and we've seen this Mishnah in the past, Muchni Shalah, the wheel that's attached to the coach itself, is it permanently attached? Well, Bizmanshi Nishmetes, if it's only temporarily attached, so it's not tightly attached, Ein Chibrula, it's considered a separate entity. The Ein Nimdedes Ima, and therefore when you want to establish the volume of the coach, which is going to be 40 Sa'a, you do not add into the calculation the Muchni Bizmanshi Mishmetes, this Muchni, which is, as we said before, because of its temporary attachment, is a separate entity. V'ein Matzelis Imar B'Oel Hames, and it doesn't combine together with the coach itself to protect any Kalim that are inside the Agala, inside the coach, the Shida, from contracting tumor when it passes over a corpse. The Ein Gorin also b'Shabbos b'Zman Sheish Oleh Mos. If there are Mos on top of the Muchni, on top of the wheel, and you might say, well, the Muchni is part of the Agala, so that although there are coins on top of the wheel, but there are no coins on top of the coach, and therefore let's assume that the Muchni is batel to the coach itself, to the Shida, and therefore I'd be allowed to move the wagon by pulling the wheels. And the answer is no. The wheels are a separate entity because it's Nishmetes, and therefore if there's any Muchts, any Mos on top of the wheel, we're not allowed to drag the wheel. Ha ain't allowed Mos. Now, the Mishnah seems to make it an absolute, unqualified rule. Are there Mos on top of the wheel? Are there not Mos on top of the wheel? What about the middle case, where there were no Mos on top of the wheel going into Shabbos, and somebody, for whatever reason, placed Mos on top of the wheel on Shabbos itself? Since the Mishnah was unqualified, ha'ein olam Mos, sharia. If there are no Mos, it's mutter. So we mentioned the case where there were no Mos on top of the wheel on Erev Shabbos going into Shabbos, and then somebody put Mos on top of the wheel. Let's take the reverse case. What happens if there were Mos on top of the wheel going into Shabbos, but right now there are no Mos on top of the wheel? The implication of our Mishnah is in that case, even though there were Mos sitting on top of the wheel going into Shabbos, nevertheless, since there are no Mos now, if they fell off, they were removed on Shabbos, you're allowed to drag the wagon and there's no Issur Mukta. So that's what would certainly reflect the Shita of Reb Shimon, who says that we reject, Reb Shimon rejects the principle of Migul Deskatzola Ben Hashmos Deskatzola Kuliyoma. And if that be the case, since Reb Yochanan is committed to Halacha Kistam Mishnah, he would have to accept this Stam Mishnah in Kalim, which reflects the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. How then can you possibly transmit in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak that Rabbi Yochanan said, Halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda? Now again, keep in mind that we know already back on Daf Memhei that Rabbi Yochanan was matir a ner, or even the Shemen Shebener, on Shabbos, after the light is extinguished, even though Ben HaShemoshes, it was lit. So Kolzmachu Dolek, Rabbi Shimon agrees that it's Muktzah, but once it goes out, it's not Muktzah. So you see that Rabbi Yochanan, that Rabbi Shimon clearly rejects the principle of Migu. Rabbi Zera says, you know what? You have to reinterpret the Mishnah. Tehei Mishnah Seinu Shalom Hoyu Aleh Mos Kol Ben Hashmosh. When the Mishnah says that Ein Gorda So B'Shabbos Bizman Sheyesh Aleh Mos, the flip side is Bizman Shehoyu Aleh Mos Ben Hashmoshos. Meaning, if it's Ein Aleh Mos and it's Mutter, that means because there were no Mos there on Ben Hashmoshos. And Ein Goros on Shabbos, Isur Muktzah, Bizman Sheyesh Aleh Mos means there were Mos, even though now there are no Mos in the middle of Shabbos when you want to drag the wheels, but there were Mos on top of the wheel going into Shabbos. Which means, Shalom Lishbar Dvar Shal Rabbi Yochanan, we don't want to create some sort of an irreconcilable steer in Rabbi Yochanan. We would like to assume, according to Rabbi Yitzchak's transmission, that Rabbi Yochanan holds Halacha Rabbi Yehuda. And that this Mishnah, Stam Mishnah in Kalim, does not reflect the Shita of Shimon, it reflects the Shita of Yehuda. But Enochinami, if there were Mos on top of the wheel on Erev Shabbos, even if the Mos fall off on Shabbos, it would still remain Muktzah and Gorin, because Migu de Ben Hashmosho, it's Katsoy Ben Hashmosho, it's Katsoy Kuliyoma. So when we read the last part of the Mishnah, which says Ein Gorin, it means Ein Gorin. Bizman Sheyesh Aleh Mos, Kol Ben Hashmoshos. There were Ben Hashmoshos that had Mos on it. Then it becomes Muktzah for the entire day, reflecting the Shita Rabbi Yehuda. So it's a Stam Mishnah Rabbi Yehuda, not a Stam Mishnah Kir Rabbi Shimon. Om Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Pamachas Holach Rebbe Lidiospera. Vahora b'minora ki Rabbi Shimon b'ner. And he paskined halacha like Rabbi Shimon, with regard to a ner, which probably means, the Gemara is going to get into this now, that when the ner goes out, you're allowed to move the ner on Shabbos, because we paskin like Rav Shimon. And that's Ora b'menorah ki Rav Shimon b'ner. So ask yourself the following question. Everybody heard of Diaspora. What makes Diaspora famous? Some sort of town in Babylon. No, the answer is because in that town, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi paskined like Rabbi Shimon ben Er. That's what makes the Diaspora a famous and a remarkable, notable town in Babylonia. Now we're going to try to understand Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's ruling. Ibailahu hora b'minora ki Rabbi Shimon ben Er le teira, o dilma hora b'minora li sura u ki Rabbi Shimon ben Er be teira. The formulation of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi here is a bit ambiguous. Two ways of interpreting what he said. The first way of understanding it is that there's one psak over here, and he was matir a menorah, just like Rabbi Shimon was matir a menorah. The other possibility is no. That as far as the menorah is concerned, he was Mora Hora Le'isura. And that makes sense because remember the sugya that we had yesterday, that it could be that a menorah, even Rav Shim would agree that it's Muktzah because it's designated exclusively for lighting purposes. Uk Rav Shim B'ner Le'tera. But Rabbi Shimon Levi accepted the view of Rabbi Shimon with regard to a ner, to be Matir the ner. Because again, the ner is something that has many different functions. And even though he lit it on Shabbos, he anticipates that it'll go out on Shabbos. He lit it on Erev Shabbos, he anticipates it'll go out on Shabbos. And therefore, he could be matir it on Shabbos itself. And the Gemara blives teku. Now the Gemara has another discussion about Muktzah. Rav Malkia Ikla Levei Rav Simloi Vitildel Shraga Veikpid Rav Simloi. So Rav Malkia was a guest in the house of Rav Simloi. And on Shabbos, he moved a lamp that had been lit, who had lit bo on Erev Shabbos, when it went out on Shabbos, and Rav Simloi was upset with it. It seems that Rav Malki accepted the Shita Rav Shimon, and Rav Simloi accepted the Shita Rav Yehuda. Another similar story. Rav Yossi Glila, Ikla Liasri, Rav Yossi, Rav Chanina. So Rav Yossi came from the Galilee, is now visiting Rav Yossi, the son of Rav Chanina, and Tiltel Shraga. He moved the lamp that had been lit on Erev Shabbos, going into Shabbos, and went out on Shabbos. V'ikbid Rav Yossi v'Rav Chanina. So it seems clear that Rav Yossi v'Rav Chanina, who was more or less the local rabbi, he objected because he held that the halach is like Rav Yehuda. You're not allowed to be metaltal l'shraga. Now, let's go back to Rav Yitzchak on Amud Aleph, who transmitted in the name of Rav Yochanan that Rav Yochanan passes like Rav Yehuda. Now we want to talk about Rav Yavo, and he was a disciple. He sort of overlapped. His two Rebbeim were Rav Yochanan and Rav Yishuv ben Levi. And Rav Yishuv ben Levi was Mekil and accepted Rav Shimon. So Rav Yavo ki ikl yasrei de Rav Yishuv ben Levi. This is the principle of the local Mora Ora. So therefore, Havi Metaltel Shraga. In other words, he felt he could certainly rely on the sheet of Rav Shimon because his Rebbe Rav Yehoshua ben Levi in this area, in this locale, we passing like Rav Shimon. So he would move the lamp that went out on Shabbos. Ki Ikla, however, when he went to Asrei, the locale of Rav Yochanan, Lo Havi Metaltel Shraga. So Gemara asks, wait a minute, Mimon Afshach, Ik Rav Yehuda Svirilei, if we're going to assume that Rav Yavo paskind like Rav Yehuda, then Liavik Rav Yehuda should be consistently machmir, but Ik Rav Shimon Svirilei should be consistently mekel Liavik Rav Shimon, Liolim Rav Shimon Svirilei. Rav Yavo himself accepted the sheet of Rav Shimon, and he could be mekel in a lamp that went out. But however, we have a principle that we go basar in the area where there's a marada asr. Rabbi Yochanan is the final word in this particular locale, and therefore, if he has to respect Rabbi Yochanan's view, he's not allowed to go against the local marada asr. And therefore, he would be machmir like Rabbi Yochanan. Now, it couldn't be the other way around. He can't be Mekil if he doesn't hold that there's such a kula. Now, back on Daf Memdalid, we understood that Rabbi Yehuda considers a lamp to be, if it's used, to be Muktzah Machmas Mir. So Rabbi Shimon never accepted that category called Muktzah Machmas Mir. So Rabbi Yehuda shrugged the Mishcha Sharil Teltula. Even Rabbi Yehuda accepts the principle, the category of Muktzah Machmas Mir, he would agree in a case of Shraga de Mishcha, which is an oil lamp, that it's not considered mos. But the nafta also litalf. If it's made of some sort of a kerosene that has a very bad smell and it's repulsive, then we have the category called Muktzah Machmas Mir. And Rabbi Yehuda accepts the shita of Rabbi Shimon, apparently, and he's going to allow you to move a regular lamp that went out. He's not going to accept muktzah. But however, in a case of muktzah machmas mius, like the case of nafta, there Rabbi Yehuda would hold that even Rabbi Shimon accepts the principle of muktzah. This is very new to us. We never heard such a thing. In other words, it gets to the point where it's so repulsive that it can't be used for anything. You know, you want to use it as fuel for lighting, that's fine. And then we get to the principle of Eitz and Vavonim, something that's intrinsically muktzah, which even Rabbi Shimon agrees is muktzah, if it has no purpose whatsoever, no permissible function. And we spoke about Chatzotzros, and we had other examples like a menorah, which has no permissible function, and therefore it's muktzah. So here the nafta, this case of a shraga the nafta has no function whatsoever. It's muktzah machmas mius to such an extent that even Rav Shimon would agree that it's muktzah. That's Rav Yehuda's opinion. However, Rabba Rav Yosef the Ami Shavayu, the nafta Nami Shari Lutil Tule, they took Rav Shimon and applied it one step further, And the Gemara is going to now try to analyze this understanding of Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef. Rav Avya Ikla Lebe Rava. So Rav Avya is visiting Rava. Havi Me'isan Be Kare Betina. Again, it's a long story over here. There's certain parts of the story that are a bit sensitive. We'll try to do the best we can. But as it turns out, Rav Avya took his shoes that were sullied and dirty during the winter months, full of mud, and Asichi Apurya Kami to Rav. In the presence of Rav, he put them on top of Rav's bed. Again, it could very well be, as we go along, we'll see this is all symbolic, and Rav Avya was actually transmitting a certain subconscious message here to Rav. But in any event, Ikpad Rava. Rava was upset. Well, why would you put your sullied shoes on top of my bed? Boy, Litzayuri. Now, what does it mean, Litzayuri? It's a real literal, it means he wanted to cause anguish to Rav Avya. What are we talking about? We're talking about some sort of nekoma. But in those days, if you had a problem with another Amora, what you would do is, in order to, in a sense, demonstrate, convey your disappointment, and perhaps, you know, your claim against him, what you would do is you fire questions at him. Now, these questions, as it turns out, will touch on the whole issue of whether putting your shoes on the bed is... Omar Le. So Rava turns to Rav Avya, and he says to him the following. My timer, Rabba Rabbi Yosef, the Amri Shavai Shraga, then after Nami Shari Litutule. What's the underlying logic that brought Rabba Rabbi Yosef to the conclusion that Rav Shimon would be matir even a Shraga than after, something that's so repulsive? Omale, Hoil Vachazi Lechsuye Beimona. Because you can take the candle, I say we'll call it the lamp, and you can use it to cover a vessel. Now, covering a vessel is really like a way of saying nafkamidah l'kedusha isha. That is some theoretical use that you could have for this shraga. Again, to put anything inside of it, forget it. It is absolutely mos. It's repugnant. But you can use it to cover something else. And this, my friends, is going to touch on a machlok between Rav and the Chachamim at the end of Masechet Shabbos. Whether we can look at something and define it as a kli, and therefore it's not muktzah, because I can use it to cover something that, you know, could tolerate filth. So Rav now challenges Rav Avya. Elamiyata, if you're right, is called Tzorosh B'chotzim Metaltalin. We know that the classic case of muktzah, which is muktzah to everyone, are stones or pebbles in this case. So he's got pebbles back in his backyard, and it shouldn't be muktzah. Why? Ho'il v'chazi l'ksuye be'bona. You could always use it to cover something. You know, you have something that flies and getting to it, you want to cover it, so put some little pebbles on top of it. Amale. Rav Avya responds by saying, your comparison, your analogy is not a fair analogy. I spoke about a shraga, and you're speaking about tzroros. Ha ikatoris kli ole, ha lekatoris kli ole. In the case of a shraga, it certainly has a function as a kli. In all dini ator, in tuvitara, etc., etc., it's a kli. Ela what, it's not used in this case to put something inside of it because that's repugnant, but you could use it to cover something else. And it retains its Torah's kli, and therefore it's not muktzah. Don't talk to me about tsroros, about pebbles, because pebbles does not have a Torah's kli. So basically, Rav Avya is telling him that which has a status as a kli, even though You can't use it for its main function. According to Rav Shimon, it doesn't become mukta. You can do something with it, and it still remains a kli. And in this case of a shraga de nafta, although you wouldn't want to put anything inside of it, but find some sort of function and cover something with it, even if it's far-fetched. And that's enough to maintain the status of a kli. It's not totally unfunctionable, not fit for anything. We'll find something, you know, use it as a store, a staple for your store. I don't know, for your door. I don't know what you'll find. You'll do something with it. And therefore, since it has the status of a kli, still has some sort of function that's permissible on Shabbos, it's not mukta according to Rav Shimon. Don't talk to me about tzoros. Again, if you want to change the nature of tzoros Erev Shabbos, we're going to have a kohol shechitas. We touched on this in the past, how you can take stones and make them mukhan for Shabbos. But just to invent a story that now I'm going to take these tzoros and I'm going to use them to cover some filth on the floor, that's something that's intrinsically mukta. It's Eitzim Vavonim, and you're not allowed to move it even Litzar Gufo. Now here I want to share with you a note in the name of the Chassam Sofer. Apparently other Achronim also came up with this Chiddush. And they want to connect our Gemara, the Shaklet Vitalia, back with the Sugya at the end of Masech the Shabbos. There Rava says, as far as Shivrei Kalim is concerned, you have an earthenware utensil that's smashed, and you have pieces. And Rav himself paskins that these Shivrei Kalim are not mukta. Why? Because you can use them to cover Kalim. However, Rav there mentioned some other use of Shivrei Kalim. And that is, you're allowed to use them to clean your shoes. You have mud on your shoes, you want to scratch off the mud, you can do so with the Shivrei Kalim. Now Rav Avya is represents, so to speak, the Chachamim that rejected Rava, and they held that Shivrei Kalim are no longer Kalim, it lost its shame kli once it smashed into small pieces, and the fact that you decide that, you know, you found some far-fledged use for it, that doesn't matter. It's intrinsically mukta, it's Eitzim Vavonim. So what Rav Avya did, again, I don't know if you take this literally or not, but he was certainly transmitting a message. What he did was, in order to demonstrate that Rav is not right, he deliberately placed his muddy shoes on Rav's bed. And basically he's telling you that you're not allowed to remove that mud with Shivrei Kalim. That was the message, subliminal message, that Rav Avya wanted to convey to Rav. So now Rav responds, when he gets the message, by asking Rav Avya, what are you going to do with Shraga the Nafta? Shraga the Nafta, you're going to tell me, even though it's Muktzah Machmas Miyus, and Rav Shimon should agree that it's not that it is Muktzah, but nevertheless it's not Muktzah, according to Rav Shimon. Why? Because Rav and Rav Yosef say that you can use it for some far-fetched use. And basically, Rav Avya, you accepted that ruling of Rav and Rav Yosef, and therefore why not apply it to the case of Shivrei Kalim as well? And if you need to wipe off your shoes, then just take one of the Shivrei Kalim, fancy English, it's called a shard, S-H-A-R-D, go back into the courtyard. So now you're coming into my house, and you want to show me that as far as you're concerned, you know, you're going to place your muddy shoes on my bed, and you're going to demonstrate you disagree with my... And now Rav is saying, no, go out into the courtyard, take some shards, and clean off the mud off your shoes. Why? Because the shards are not mukta. And why is that? Because shards can be used to clean off the shoes. So Rav Avya rejects Rav. The Gemara at the end of Masechta Shabbos brings various riyos to Shitas Rav Avya and the other Amoraim who disagree with Rav. But basically, the shards don't have a shame kli. And that was the answer of Rav Avya to the question about Tzoros. Milo Sanya, Rav Avya quotes a brisa to support his view. Here we're turning to Daf Mem Vav Amud Beis. Hashirim vanizobi vatabas. These are various kinds of jewelry, bracelets, nose rings, rings. Harein kechol hakelim anitolim v'chotzer. And they have the status of any other kli that you find in your chotzer. And although there's certain things that, this is Perek Vav, Isha B'mei Isha Yotzei, that the Rabbanon prohibited for women to go out and wear certain articles of clothing and jewelry, because maybe sometimes they'll take them off in the middle of the street, they'll continue walking, carrying it, Dalet Amos and Rishus Harabim. So there's one opinion in the Gemara, down on Daf Samach Dalet, that the Chachamim actually instituted an enactment to enjoin wearing these articles, even if they're enclosed in a courtyard. So we're not talking about a Rishus HaRabim, we're talking about a Rishus HaYochid, because the courtyard is surrounded by four mechitzos. And yet the Chacham say, we don't want the woman to go out of her house wearing these jewelry. And our Braisa, that we're studying here, Ashirayim HaNizomet HaBos HaRein Kekola Kelim HaNitole B'chot, reflects the opposite Shita, that the only Iser B'mer Yisha Yotzeis is only in Rishus HaRabim, where she might carry it Dalet Amos if she takes it off, but not in a chotzer. Now, let's go one step further. Let's assume that this brisa, for argument's sake, would maintain the shita of that opinion in the Gemara Daf Samach Dalet, that even in a chotzer it's osur, so she cannot wear them. Now the brisa asks a different question. Okay, she's not allowed to wear these pieces of jewelry out in a chotzer, but nevertheless, are they muktzah? So let's say within a chotzer, I'm allowed to move something from one port to the other, right? There's no Eser in a chotzer. Let's say they made an Erev, or it's my own private chotzer, whatever it might be. Can we move these articles of jewelry within the chotzer? Or for that matter, take them from the chotzer into Shusayach, into the house? Maybe we should say they're muktzah. And why is it muktzah? Because what function do these pieces of jewelry have once they're out in the courtyard? Because we're holding that she can't even wear them in the courtyard. So why is there no muktzah? Omar Ula. Ula explains, my Tom, why is there no muktzah? Ho'il v'ikataris kli'ale. That even though in this particular locale, right here in the chotzer, she cannot wear them, but nevertheless, that's not mafkia, the Torah's kli. Let's say she can't use it for wearing it as a taksha to go out in Rishus HaRabim. But you know what? She'll find some other use for it. Like we said, some far-fetched use for it. So it doesn't lose its Torah's kli. So Rav Avya says to Rava, Hachinami, you have something that had a Torah's kli. For example, the Shraga Dinafta. You know, if I find some sort of far-fetched use for this shragan and after, then it retains its status as a kli, and it's not muktzah. Omer Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok, Brich Rachmana delo kasife rova l'Rav Avya. Rav Nachman blesses the Ribbono Shalom, the compassionate one, who made sure that Rava did not embarrass Rav Avya with all his barrage of questions. Now let's go back to Rav Shimon. Rami Leah by Lerabba. Lechora, we have a stira with regard to Rav Shimon Shita. Tanya, we learned that the Rice of Mosar, Hashem and Shebeneir Shebekara, also Rav Shimon Matir. So when the lamp goes out on Shabbos and there's oil, leftover oil, Shirayim of oil, so Tanakami in this brisa says that you're not allowed to benefit from the oil, even though the flame is out. Rav Shimon is mati, permits it because he anticipated that at some point the flame would go out and he would enjoy the benefit of the oil. So there's already a built-in hachana. Alma Rav Shimon Lesley Mukta, fine, or a mini. Now I have a kasha from a Mishnah, Rav Shimon Omer. Kol she'ein mumo nika merv shabbat merv yontif ein zebin amuchan. So we're talking about a bechor, which is the first male born to an animal. And again, when we talk about an animal, we're talking about goats and sheep and cows. And that bechor has to be given to the kohen, and it's chayv and akrov on the mizbeach. So that's kedushas mizbeach, unless it has a mum. Now, if this mum is a mum over, it's a temporary blemish, then it retains its kedushal mizbeach. But if it's a mum she'eno over, it's a permanent mum, then it becomes mum shel kohen. You can check it anywhere, even outside the mikdash, and it's a bechor she'esh bo mum. Now we need a mumchan expert. Yati Bechor is Yati. You got a special ordination for determining whether this mum in a Bechor is a mum over or it's a mum kavua. And go find such a person. Now, again, in our time, we don't bring a Bechor on the Mizbeach, but nevertheless, it does have Kedushas Bechor because that's Kedushas later, the minute it's born into this world. And if it has no mum, then you can't slaughter it. You have to make sure that it gets a mum. Now, the status of a bechor, if it has no mum, is mukta. Now, why is that very relevant? Because we want to know whether you're allowed to shecht it. That's only relevant to yontif. So now it's yontif. And you want to know whether you could shecht this bechor. Well, if it's unblemished, then it has kedushas mizbeach, you can't shecht it. But what happens if a blemish is apparent on this animal, on this bechor, this firstborn goat or sheep, and now you bring it to a mumcha, and the mumcha decides on yontif that this is a mum kavua, can I shecht it? Now, Rav Shimon himself holds that you're not allowed to ask a mumcha to paskin on a bechor on yontif. That has to do with sugyas at the end of Beitzah about Mekach u'Memkar and about Mishpat Dinim. We don't have lawsuits on yontif. It's all the Rabbana. And now paskining on a bechor is also the Rabbana. But let's argue, think out of the box. Let's say this mumcha would paskin on this bechor illegally on yontif, and he would say, this is a mum kavua. Would you be allowed to shecht it on yontif? And we have now a Mishnah that quotes Rav Shimon in Beitzah that says that if Erev Yontif we had no way of knowing whether this mum is kavua or not kavua, then you don't have to prepare it. You cannot, in effect, prepare for shechit on yontif, and if not prepared, then it's muktzah. Which seems to indicate that Rav Shimon does accept muktzah. Ein zeh min ha-mukhan. So the underlying premise of this statement, ein zeh min ha-mukhan, is that you need hachana. Otherwise it's muktzah. How do we reconcile that with Mosar Shem and Shebiner, which according to Rav Shimon is not muktzah? So the Gemara answers, Rabba says, Chalchi Ashta, there's no analogy here. Hasam. In the case of a ner, Adam Yosef Mitzapeh Mosai Tichbed Nero, he anticipates up front that this ner is going to be extinguished. It's got a minimum, or shall we say, an average amount of volume of oil in it, and ichveis, it'll take 5 hours, 10 hours. It'll go out. And that's called Minam Muchan. The fact that it was Muktzah Ben Hashmashos, that's not a principle that Rav Shimon accepts. But Hacha, let's take a look at this case of a mumcha who decided to paskin on an animal, a bechor, on yontif, and decided that this is a mum kavua. Adam Yoshev, we ask a rhetorical question, mitzapeh, he's anticipating, masai yipol bo mum. He doesn't even know if it has a mum. And meimar amar miyemer denofel be muma V'im timtzalom d'nafal be'mum miyemai d'nafik be'y. D'nafal be'mum kavua. V'im timtzalom d'nafal be'mum kavua miyemai d'mizdalik le'chacham. It's impossible to join together a whole chain of possibilities, achad gadya here, and assume that it was min amuchan on erev yontif. Because, first of all, who says it's going to get a mum? And second of all, what kind of a mum? Is it a blemish that's temporary or permanent? And even if it's permanent, who's going to tell you that it's permanent? Who's going to give you the ruling and paskin and be matir shchita on this animal, on this bechor? And therefore, even Reb Shimon would say that since he doesn't anticipate this animal would ever become mutar and yontif, it's a bechor going into yontif, with all the surim of shchita and kedushas mizbeach, then it's clear that this is not a stira, this is not a contradiction to Reb Shimon's opinion in Ner, where he anticipates and almost by scientific knowledge he can tell you exactly how long the Ner is going to go out. And therefore, when the Ner goes out, he knows that he has the oil and he has access to the lamp and the oil. It's not mukta, but did he guess in his wildest dreams that this bechor is going to be mutar on yontif? That's completely mufka, that's excluded from hachana. Now again, there's a little bit of a problem here, I'm not denying it, because we've said it over and over again that Rav Shimon only accepts mukta in the case of maktzah b'yadayim, where he takes the figs and the grapes and he raises them up onto the roof. And that action of being maktzah b'yadayim makes it into mukta. And of course, he's not Yoshi Mitzapi. He doesn't expect that the sun would beat down so heavily and speed up the process such that the raisins and the dried figs were ready to be eaten during Shabbos. And it would seem that this case of Bechor should fit into that category of Grogos Vitzimukim. He doesn't anticipate the potential of being matir this Bechor. So if that be the case, then it would seem that maybe we should not only accept and understand and justify this Mishnah and Beitzah in the case of a Bechor that was healthy going into Yontif, but what about a Bechor that had a Mum going into Yontif? Would that be Muktzah? So let's, if we accept the equation here between Bechor and Grogos Vitzimukim, and Rav Shimon would agree he doesn't anticipate that this Bechor will be mutter, even though he wasn't Makta B'Yadayim, he didn't actually actively set it aside. So maybe we could say the following. But again, this is going to be problematic. Let's say that Reb Shimon equates the following. Something where he pushes it aside, like Rogus Vitzimukim, and something which is dependent upon a mumche who's going to show up, who's going to paskin on Yontif against the law, and he's going to determine that this mum is a mum kavua. The fact that we need this mumche is almost as if, again, I don't know how to just jump over that gap, but almost as if he was Maktzeh B'Yadayim. It's as if he looks at this Bechor on Erev Yontif and he says, this Bechor is not fit for Shechita on Yontif. Because how could I possibly anticipate the appearance of this Mumche and his going ahead and violating the Din and paskining and ruling on this Bechor and ruling that it is a mum kavua? I'm not happy with it for another reason. I'm not happy with it because what would be in a case where there was a mum in this bechor going into yontif? The baal, is the owner, is very much aware of it, but he still is dependent upon the mumcha to show up in paskin. The Gemara's language here is Meimar Omer Miyemer Denafel Be Muma. It sounds like this animal was absolutely healthy on Erev Yom Tov. I would have said that if what makes it Maksimi a dime like Rogus Tzimur is the fact that he depends upon the Mumcha showing up, even if the Mum was there on Erev Yom Tov, who says that the, you know, that the Hachana here is built into the fact that there will be a Mumcha and the Mumcha will Paskin that way? I mean, I don't know how you'd anticipate, especially since it's also to Paskin on Shabbos, on Yom Tov. So that point, I don't have an explanation for. In any event, bottom line, that's Rabba's reconciliation. He holds that although Rabbi Shimon is Matir Ner, but yet he would ask in the case of a Bechor. Masiv Rami Bar Chama. And now we're taking a look at a Mishnah at the very end of Masechet Shabbos. Says, Mefirin, Mefirin, Nidorim, B'Shabbos. So our first Nidorim is a reference to a married couple, or the case of a father of a Nara. And the Torah granted the father, or in the case of a married woman, the husband rights to be mefer Nidorim of his wife. And now the question is, if let's say a woman took a vow that she wouldn't eat meat, and now going into Shabbos, the husband in this case was mefer the nedarim. Is she allowed to eat that meat? Certainly that farah would be chal, but what about muktzah? So we have this Mishnah that says that not only is hafaras nedarim feasible and permissible on Shabbos, but even she'elas nedarim, otherwise known as hataras nedarim. When a person shows up in front of a Yochid Mumche, an expert, he says to him, I took this vow, but I didn't realize X, Y, and Z, and therefore it's not valid, it's a tos. And if it's Litzorich Shabbos, for example, let's say he took a vow not to eat on Shabbos, Rashi gives that example, we're going to be Mater is Neder on Shabbos, as we said before, Yochid Mumche, maybe three Hedyotos. So at this point, the Gemara asks, Amai, why should we be allowing the eating of this meat on Shabbos, according to Rabbi's logic in Bechor? Lema, why don't we say, Mi Yemar Demizdakek Le Baal? Who says that the husband will definitely decide to get involved in his wife's neder on Shabbos? And even if he gets involved, there's no guarantee that he will annul the vow. He will exercise his right of hafara. So she would not be able to anticipate that this vow will be annulled. And therefore the meat about which she took this vow should remain muktzah. And that should be true, according to Rabba, no less than it's true in the case of Bechor, even according to Rabbi Shimon. So again, let's see the analogy. Just like Rabba says that in the case of Bechor, he couldn't anticipate that the Mumcha would come along and pronounce the Mum as a Mum Kavua, because he's enjoined from ruling on a Bechor on Shabbos, or on Yom Tov, so too, a woman doesn't anticipate that her husband will be Befriz her neder. But the truth is that Hafaras Nedarim is Mutter on Shabbos for the sake of Shabbos. So it's not exactly similar to the case of Bechor. So that's a problem. Tosis di Ramasim b'yemar. So the Gemara rejects and says, Hosam Kidra Pinchas Mishmei Derava. So the lumdus of this next piece of Gemara is fascinating. The Gemara is going to establish that it's not that there is an Isur on the bus or by virtue of her vow, but rather the status of this vow is mitlet toli, it's suspended in midair, and it depends upon the husband. Until the husband gives his okay, and validates the neder, it's not a neder. The Omar Pinchas Mishmei de Rava call noderes haldas bailo noderes. So the entire neder, the whole enterprise of this vow and its validity is contingent upon her husband accepting the neder. If he doesn't, if he doesn't accept the neder, then it's not a neder. So that's not like the case of a Bechor. A Bechor now has full Kedushas Bechor, and it's also B'shchit, also it's dedicated for the Mizbeach. Now you want to come up with a new Matir and say, well, a Mum is going to fall, and then the expert is going to determine that. That's a real Muktzah situation. But a Neder, that's a whole different story. Toshma, the Gemara now wants to go back to the original stira and try to offer a solution. And let's take a look at this Mishnah at the end of Masechet Shabbos. It says, Nish'olim l'nedarim shel tzorech ha-Shabbos b'Shabbos. We can have a She'elas Chacham on a neder to invalidate the neder on Shabbos, for the sake of Shabbos. Let's say, for example, he takes a neder that he won't eat on Shabbos. Now he comes to the Chacham and he says, release me from my neder, be mate my neder. And the reason for that is because I want to be able to eat this meat on Shabbos. So that's the Torah Shabbos, and it's okay. V'amai, lema miyemer dimizdagik le'chacham. Why don't we again apply the same logic? Here it's not that the neder depends upon the askama, the validation of the chacham, like it was true in the case of an isha married woman who depends upon her husband to validate the neder. Here, this power that the Torah gave to the chacham to, shall we say, invalidate the neder. But right now, the neder is valid. And who says the chacham is going to come and he'll agree to release her from, or him from, the neder? This should be mukta. So Gemara answers, Hosam, ilo mizdagik le chacham, sagi le b'shloshed yotus. This chacham mumcha, yochid mumcha, might not agree to invalidate the nether, release the person who took the nether from his nether, but you know what? He'll find three hedyotos, three non-mumcha, you know, regulars, rank and file citizens, and they'll certainly agree to release him from the nether. Therefore, it's not mukta. But in the case of Bechor, you know, go find a chacham who's going to be willing to violate the Iser of Yontif and be matu the Bechor. That's not something we can anticipate. Now the Gemara again goes back to Reb Shimon, but on Daf Mem Dalid, we had a Reb Shimon who says that you're allowed to move the Ner after it goes out. On Shabbos, Rami Le Abayi Le Rav Yosef, Mi Omer Rav Shimon Kofsa Mutu Le Taltala, which means a Kofsa in Lo Kofsa Lo, that as long as the lamp is lit, you're not allowed to move the lamp, my timer. And the reason for that is Dilma Bahadi did not get Le Kofsa. Maybe as he's moving the lamp, which is lit, he may come to extinguish the lamp. So the question is, why should Rav Shimon be worried about that possibility? It's a Dover Shana Miskavin. Hoshamina later, Rav Shimon Diomar. Rav Shimon is committed to the position all over Shas that Dover Shana Miskavin Mutter. The Sanya Rav Shimon Omer, the famous Bryce Rav Shimon Gorer Adam Kise Mitu Mesavsal. The person is allowed to drag a heavy bench or a couch on soft ground on Shabbos. And there's a serious possibility, I don't know what the statistics are, that he will make charitzim. He will make furrows in the ground, which opens the ground for sowing, for seeding, and therefore it's v'lechas choresh. And Rav Shimon allows you to do this, v'vad shel yiskavin lasos charitz, as long as he doesn't have kavana. So here also, what are you worried about? If he moves the lamp while it's lit, he may come to extinguish the lamp. So what? That's a possibility, but he never had an intention to do so, and that should be mutter under the law of Dover Shana Miskavin. And Rav Yosef answers, Kol Heicha Dechi Mechavin Ika Yisur Doraisa. Let's take a look. If he would have had kavana to extinguish the candle, then he would violate a Melacha Doraisa of Kibui. Ki Lo Mechavin. In the absence of kavana, gozer Reb Shimon min Rabban. Reb Shimon says we have to worry about the possibility that if he doesn't have kavana today, maybe tomorrow he'll do it with kavana. However, kol heichdechi mechavim, what about a scenario in which, even if I grant you in the worst case, that he'll have kavana, he will not violate an isur d'oraisa, but rather ikra isur d'rabbanan, he'll only be violating a d'rabbanan. Like, take for example, in the case of gorer mita kisei v'savsol, even if Chas v'Sholem he would have kavana to make pharaohs, but nevertheless, that's only an isur d'rabbanan. Now, why is this an isur d'rabbanan? This is called kelachar yad, which means that this is an unusual way of carrying, of making furrows in the ground. You know, he's not using a plow like he would normally do. And if he does it in an unusual way, which is called kelachar yad b'shinui, that's in the worst case, a violation of isur d'rabbanan. Is kilo machavin shari Reb Shimon l'chatchila? Therefore, Reb Shimon will allow you to drag these couches and chairs through ground, because even if Chas v'Shalom would have kavana, he would still not violate an Iser Malacha Doraisa. But that's not true in the case of putting out a candle, which is Meleches Mechaba, and there, if he would have kavana, heaven forbid, he would violate a Malacha Doraisa of Kibui. And therefore, Reb Shimon is going to have to say it's Asur, even below Miskavin, because he may come, Chas v'Shalom, to have Kavana. Masiv Rava. Rava asked the fine question from a Mishnah Kelayim. We've discussed this Mishnah on various occasions in the past. Mochrei Ksus, Mochrin Kidarkon. There are people who are carrying their wares, their garments, to sell them from place to place, and they wear them in order to show their potential clients what the begadim, what these clothes are like. And in certain cases, these garments are actually made of kelayim. There's an iser of hanos levishas kelayim. But yet, nevertheless, if he's not miskaven, then it's okay. So during the summer months, he shouldn't have kavana to enjoy the protection from the sun. And during the winter months, he shouldn't enjoy the begodim, these kalayim begodim, as protection from the cold or the rain. Hatznuim, those who were super pious, they went beyond the letter of the law. Mafshilin b'makel achoreihem. They would take those begodim that are kalayim and they would hang them on a stick behind them, like Huckleberry Finn style. So now the Gemara asks the following question. This is Rava's Kasha. Hocha dechi mechavin isur d'oraisa ika. How could you allow the Mochrei Ksus to wear these begodim? And you add the condition that they wouldn't have kavana. Your principle is that we always have to worry about kavana. An ena miskavin or to a miskavin. Hocha dechi mechavin. If they would have kavana isur d'oraisa ika, they would violate an isur d'oraisa of levishas. Kilayim is kilo machavin shori Reb Shimon lechatchila. Is Reb Shimon going to allow this lechatchila? And based on this, Rava rejects the thesis of Rav Yosef. And Rav Yosef's chiluk between, well, if he would have kavana, would he violate a doraisa or not? And Rav is going to say that Reb Shimon would be matir a davashenim is coming, even if we're dealing with the possibility, theoretically, of violating a doraisa if he would have kavana. Ela Omar Rava. And here we turn to Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. Hanach Lener Shemen Upsila Hoil Venasa Bosses L'Dover Asur. You want to know what's the issue of Ner? Why you can't move the Ner while it's lit? And you're telling me, well, in the worst case scenario, he might extinguish it, but he doesn't have kavana, Reb Shimon should be matir. The answer is, we have a problem here, a fundamental problem in Muktzah, which, you know, crosses all political lines, and would allow Reb Shimon to accept and validate Muktzah. And that's called Basis L'Dover Asur. So it means the following. That the flame itself is muktzah. And that's because you can't touch the flame because you'll extinguish the flame. Now, this flame doesn't exist independent of a wick and of oil and a lamp that holds the oil. These all are considered and defined as a basis, as a base for the shalhevis, for the flame itself. And therefore, Reb Shimon would not allow you to move this ner as long as it's lit, because of the principle of mukta machmas iser and bosses ledover asur. Now, what's remaining for us is to define a little bit more about the shalhevis itself, why the flame is considered dover asur, you're not allowed to touch it. And secondly, to define the nature of bosses ledover asur. So, if we have time, but we need it tomorrow, we'll try to pick that up here on Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. For the meantime, we're going to end the Shia here on Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, on the top of the Amud, on the second line from the top. We'll start with tomorrow with Amar Abzerah.